Forget about it. It's one more thing.
Armstrong and Getty.
One more thing.
So it's going to be more or less all Sopranos. One more thing podcast today. If you weren't into The Sopranos, you might not find this interesting. On the other hand, if you weren't into The Sopranos, I don't really want to talk to you. Really don't have that much interest in hanging around you. I can't,
wow.
Can't imagine.
A belligerent.
Can't imagine not being into The Sopranos.
Different people have different tastes.
So I'll tell you what we're going to get to here in just a second is David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos, on how he chose that song, the Journey song, from the season finale and what that was all about. And we all been wanting to hear a little bit about that. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But tomorrow is the debut at the Tribeca Film Festival of the movie The Many Saints of Newark. If you're a Sopranos fan, you've been waiting for this prequel for a long time. It's also a David Chase vehicle.
So, and it's a movie, not a series, right?
It's a movie. Yep.
Yeah.
Debuting at the film festival tomorrow, and then it debuts, like, we can all watch it October 1st, which is only, a week away or so. So we'll play a little of the trailer. It's pretty visual. I don't know. We'll see how it sounds. It's actually James Gandolfini's actual real-life son playing him as a teenager and how he ends up becoming the mob boss that is Tony Soprano. Here's a little of it.
What do you want, Richard?
I'll be honest with you.
I want the money.
I want to do a good deed. I want to do a lot more.
Life for free.
I try to set an example for my nephew.
Give them to the birds and bees.
Anthony got kicked out of school. I went through all that trouble. And for what?
I'm always being accused.
You gotta be good.
That's what I want.
I
want
to do whatever I can to help the family.
That's what I want. Money don't get everything. It's true.
Okay, that's probably enough. It's like 2.5 minutes long, and I've seen it, and the visual is really good. I'll tell you what. I'm only being accused. He looks exactly like you would expect young Tony Soprano to look. Exactly. He's got the face. Of course, it's his son, so that would help. But I'm excited about it. I was just looking through the cast, the guy who's playing the young Polly Walnuts. How could you not be, if you're a Sopranos person, how could you not be excited about learning about a young Polly Walnuts?
So how am I going to see this fine motion picture? Do I got to go to the theaters or what?
I don't know. You know, I don't ever even worry about that anymore. I just assume it'll be obvious to me. HBO Max. There you go.
There you go.
Streaming somewhere. But also, you know, Tony's mom was such the character in The Sopranos.
Oh, poor you.
Exactly. Seeing a young, hot version of her being the mom that tortured him as a youth.
Oh, go shit in your hat.
Right.
Oh, poor you.
Exactly. Seeing a young her and everything like that. And so I don't know. I'm pretty damned excited about it. I got to find somebody that's into The Sopranos to watch it with, because it just seems like one of those experiences.
You could take your son.
Ray Liotta's in it playing Dickie Maltasante, who is the head of the family that Tony then takes over. So,
and father of Chrissy?
And so, yeah.
Father of Christopher.
And, of course, if you don't know the actor's names, that's Henry from Goodfellas. So, you know, he's got some good credibility in mob movies. But I'm really excited about this movie. The trailer looks freaking fantastic. And with David Chase behind it, how could it not be? It's got to be, right?
Yeah, oh, I think so. I think, yeah, unless, you know, he made a serious misstep. Often it's a mystery why movies that seem like they ought to be good turn out to be crappy. But I have a feeling, you know, he's treading some pretty familiar ground here. I think it'll be good.
And I'm sure he'd been thinking about it for years. Well, look, somebody Google, when was the Sopranos finale? What year was that? How long ago was that?
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. Hanson's Googling it for us. 2010? No, longer ago than that.
I don't know.
I don't want to know.
Are you finding it, Hanson?
Somebody's Googling. I don't want to tax my brain.
2007.
My brain tires easily. 14 years ago?
So he's had 14 years ago to think about the prequel. So I'm expecting it to be great. I'll be shocked if it's not great. Of course, I thought The Irishman would be great. How could you have all these people, everybody involved here?
Got the team back together.
You got the team back together. And it was, I thought it sucked. I mean, I thought it was just garbage. So there you go with that.
I wonder if
it was bad, but it was long.
Yeah. Yep.
I wonder if Meadow will be in this. You know, Meadow and Artie, you know, the little characters.
Well, Artie maybe, but Meadow is his offspring. Yeah. So how is that going to happen? He's a teenager in this.
There's a time machine involved?
I don't know. I didn't think it through.
Apparently not.
Clearly.
So here's David Chase talking about how he chose the final song for the episode that aired June 10th, 2007.
I was in the scout van with all the department heads, production design. We're looking for locations. And I never had done this before. I said, listen, I'm going to talk about three songs that I want thinking about for ending the show. And they were like, he's asking us. One of them was Al Green. What the hell's the name of that song?
Love and Happiness?
Love and Happiness.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
The second one I don't remember, and the Journey song, Don't Stop Believing. They went, oh, Jesus, no, don't do that. And I said, well, I guess that's it. That's the one. I wasn't saying that because just to throw it in their face.
Yeah.
I just thought that was kind of my favorite, and I just thought it got a reaction of some kind. So I can make this song lovable.
I got nothing from that.
I know, it's disappointing. I thought it would be something really...
What's the third one? What do you mean you don't remember the third one? Think about it for a second.
That's a really good story, David Chase. There are three songs I was considering. One, I don't... What is it? Some song I don't remember. And then the second one I don't remember. And then the third one. What the hell kind of story is that?
And they said, no, don't do that. And I thought, perfect, because I got a reaction. Okay, great. All right. Super.
So, Little Steven... The guitar player from the East Street Band and mm-hmm. Silvio, Tony Soprano's right-hand man. Little Steven's got a book out about his life, if you want to read another rock and roll book. But anyway, I didn't realize how close he came to be Tony Soprano. In fact, he was the choice for Tony Soprano.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. He had never acted in his life. And for some reason, David Chase thought he'd be perfect to be Tony Soprano. And called him up and offered it to him. And he's like, what are you, crazy? I've never acted. And he said, I've seen you on stage. You've been acting your whole life. You could do this. So anyway, that was David Chase's main guy. And that was all ready to go. And they went to HBO. And HBO said, no, we're not putting this kind of money behind a nobody as the lead. So they made up a character, Silvio, to have Little Steven still be in it. And hired James Gandolfini.
Huh.
Who didn't think he was capable of pulling off the role. And nearly quit many, many times during the first season. They'd finish an episode or finish filming, and James Gandolfini said, I'm not right for this. It's just, I'm not the right guy for this. Which is interesting, given the fact that it seems like he's the perfect guy for it, and you can't imagine anybody else making the show as powerful as it was. Which shows you how crazy artists are.
Yeah, and how crazy art is. So, you know, maybe his discomfort with the role shone through as discomfort with his life.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Powerful.
Right.
So playing the conflicted mob boss, who the opening scene is, he's seeing his therapist secretly. Yeah, you're right.
Wow. You know, I've actually heard actors talk about how there were aspects of the project that were really uncomfortable or whatever, and they channeled that into their character. You know, I don't know how that works exactly, and that's why actors end up nuts, I guess, but... Oh, that's interesting. I had no idea about that in James Gandolfini.
Favorite Sopranos scene?
Scene?
Yeah, I don't know why. One popped into my head, so I've got one ready to go. So
oh,
I have
go
to
ahead.
I have, I have to pretend it's a conversation for everybody when I just want to say something.
All right, well, you talk. I'll think about it.
I was picturing, because I mentioned him being in Dr. Melfi's office, which I think is how episode one starts. He's the mob boss seeing a therapist, which is a pretty good hook.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think it actually starts with the chase scene. He's chasing down a gambler who didn't pay, and he goes onto the lawn and beats the guy up. But then he's seeing the therapist. Anyway, many years later, he's seeing Dr. Melfi, and he looks into the cuff of his dress pants, and he sees a tooth in there and reaches down there and pulls the tooth out because he'd smashed that guy's face on the step.
Oh.
Because that guy came on to Meadow, made a like really uncool sexual joke to his daughter, and he found out about it. Remember that? And he goes back to the restaurant, finds him, and beats the crap out of that guy.
Or was it in a department store?
No, it was a restaurant.
It was a restaurant.
Restaurant? Okay.
Yeah.
It must have been a different Meadow incident.
Oh, that was ugly. Anyway, he puts that guy's upper teeth on the top of a cement stair and stomps on the back of his head.
Yep, I remember that.
And then so when he's seeing Dr. Melfi the next day, he finds a tooth in the cuff of his dress pants.
Brutality.
Oh. Well, the guy had a
cuff. That's your favorite scene? What's the matter with you?
Because everybody would like to be able to do that for their kid, probably particularly their daughter. That's what the appeal was Tony Soprano. They allowed him to do things that you kind of rooted for or could relate to. The struggles of being a parent and trying to keep your wife happy and your kids happy and worried about how your kids are going to turn out and just all those things.
My favorite scenes, on the other hand, were when Christopher was pitching his idiotic movie to various Hollywood insiders. Absolutely hilarious. It's like Saw meets The Godfather.
I remember the first time I ever saw The Sopranos, and I joined it late, like several seasons in, and I turned it on HBO, and I remember the appeal, and this probably sounds coarse, but the first thing that struck me as being unique, his wife's got a big ass. I thought, he's a fat guy, and his wife's got a big ass.
Yes, finally.
They're regular people. They're us. They're everyone.
They're certainly Jersey.
Yeah, it was just like, wow, regular-looking people struggling with their marriage and raising their kids. I thought, this is incredible.
Speaking of Steven Van Zandt, little Miami Steve, little Steven, my other favorite scene is every time he would shrug, I don't know, I don't know, Tom, who was one of the greatest shruggers in the history of cinema. Hmm?
You got one, Hanson?
No, just some of the odd stuff that popped up, like David Lee Roth at a poker game.
Yeah.
You know, where did that come from?
yeah, right. I think that show, I haven't watched it in a long time, and I think that holds up as good as anything ever.
Yeah, it could be. Although the storylines that just kind of ended at the end of an episode, that was kind of frustrating sometimes, but, you know, that's just
you got a
the
favorite,
nature
Michael?
Of the beast.
I just remember my favorite character was a short-term one. Her name was Gloria. She was
the
car dealer.
Mercedes.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Man, she was nice to look at.
She was but crazy.
So your favorite thing in the show was a hot chick.
No, and
it's
what
really
about,
weak.
No, but what about the van that ran over that guy's head and the squishy noise they made?
Oh,
that
was all right. You two are sick.
I'm just saying.
You two need counsel.
It was very unique.
That was the second to last episode.
Yeah.
He had it coming. The second to last episode was the best episode of the entire series. When Tony goes to bed laying there with that great big giant gun on his chest.
Oh,
wondering what's going to happen next.
Oh, boy.
God,
that's
show
right.
is so good.
I'm
going to
rewatch it.
I'm going to have to revisit it myself. My wife had never seen it before, so we watched the whole thing front to end in, that would have been 2008, I guess, 2007. It was after it went off the air. And I rewatched the whole thing beginning to end. It was every bit as good. Every episode was every bit as good as I remember.
Did you suffer through the whole Kevin Finnerty episodes where he was like in a coma or something?
When he got shot by Uncle June?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And almost spoiler died. Alert.
One more thing that I remember. So he kind of had a thing for Dr. Melfi for a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He wanted to date her, hit on her repeatedly.
And so he was telling one of his immigrant girlfriends he wanted her to dress nicer. Like, you know, like a business suit. You want me to dress like a man? No, you fucking wackadoo. I've always thought that was so funny.
Beautiful.
Well.
Oh, jeez.
I guess that's it.
I what? I reveal my own what?
There you go.